So here we are on our next centenary walk, and today I'm walking with Jolie Brearley. Jolie's the founder of Pregnant Then Screwed, an organisation working to end the motherhood penalty. It was set up 3 years ago in response to her own experience, and to date Pregnant Then Screwed has supported almost 3,000 women. Her five demands for legislative change have gathered over 100,000 signatures and supported by 103 MPs. A national protest, March of the Mummies, was staged in six cities across the UK, one city in the US, and her PTS Live events have supported hundreds of mothers to find work that works for them. Jolie's a regular contributor on Radio 5 Live. She writes The Telegraph and The Independent and has won awards and accolades for her pioneering work with mothers.
I wrote a post about this yesterday. It's just saying, you know, when you have a baby, you learn more about yourself than you do. About babies or children, you learn how to love, you learn resilience, you learn teamwork, you learn how to
crisis management,
you learn how to multitask like a ninja, all these amazing skills that no management course in the world could ever teach you. It made me certainly a much fuller rounded human being, and yet we're devalued for having children rather than them seeing it as gone through this incredible experience. It was International Women's Day 2015 when I got out of bed and said, right, today's the day that I will launch Pregnant Then Screwed. And so I figured out how to build a website while bouncing a child on one knee who was eating his Weetabix that was flying everywhere, and figured out how to use WordPress, and then put my story on there, put the stories of two friends, and then sent it out into the world. And that's where it all began.
I love what you've created. And so where you are now, is that where you expected to be? What were you?
No, is the short answer. I don't think I really expected anything. I just knew that I was so bitter and angry about what had happened to me and how I hadn't been able to do anything about it. And I knew that there were other women that felt the same. And rather than go and post a dog poo through their letterbox or try and rubbish them in any other way, I thought I wanted to maybe try and do something to change, to create real change.
Yeah.
Because posting a poo through a letterbox would be funny, but wouldn't really change anything.
Though in that moment, a little bit of satisfaction.
Just that slight satisfaction for that moment.
But you've given voice to a community that was, the approach was divide and conquer, wasn't it? That people didn't share these stories because there's a bit of, shame, embarrassment, and people get expected to sign gagging orders or what are those agreements called?
Non-disclosure agreements.
That's it. But it's a compromise agreement.
Yeah.
So they're expected to sign a compromise agreement, which means they can never talk about it. Means somebody's got away with doing something they shouldn't have done.
It's just like sexual harassment. So obviously we've had the Me Too and Time's Up movement that were triggered by Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
And from that came a public exploration of what is happening with non-disclosure agreements, compromise agreements, and the fact that very powerful people are able to pay women off to shut them up. And that is a problem. But it's the same with pregnancy and maternity discrimination.
Yes.
Women are encountering this type of discrimination in their droves, and it's affecting the rest of their lives.
Yes.
And their relationships, and we wonder why we have a gender pay gap.
And that's where career meets parenting, and people either bail out on the basis of actually I can't be the person I want to be in this organisation, or flatline. So okay, I'll just do what I need to do and live my life outside of work.
Yeah.
With a small minority be able to continue career, but at what cost?
And it's not just bailing out, they've gotten rid of, they're booted out. One in nine women who get pregnant will get booted out of their job. And that experience just shatters your confidence and completely. It did for me, made me feel really embarrassed and worthless. And it happens to you, of course, when you're at your most vulnerable. So you're pregnant, or you've just come back from maternity leave, or you're on maternity leave.
And what bargaining power do you have at that point? Not much.
I don't have any.
And this is where people, I get the sense that people sort of almost have their hands out to, oh, you know, anything you can give me, I'd be grateful for. No, actually negotiate your position and be positive about what you're bringing back. The company needs you to come back. It needs your expertise and your knowledge, and but don't downplay it.
But you don't have the strength to point.
I agree. But this is the point, isn't it? So there's a policy around return, but actually if there isn't that, the cultural bit that sits around it, then the policy really is just a piece of paper.
Exactly. Yep. And I mean, I've spoken to so many women who are completely broken by the experience, and it happened 10 years ago.
Yeah.
They still have not recovered from what happened to them because, I mean, in my case, I was sacked. And the day after I told them I was pregnant, which was brutal, but preferable to what some women go through, which is bullying and harassment. So lots of companies know that it's illegal to sack you, it's illegal to make you redundant. So instead of risking a lawsuit, they use other insidious mechanisms to push you out. And often that is stripping you down, making you feel insignificant within an organisation, and bullying and harassment tactics. So I hear so many stories of women who were really flying in their careers, everything was amazing. Then they say, I'm pregnant. 1 week later they do personal development review and suddenly they're substandard.
But these people were the future ones. They were the graduates, they were the high potential, high flyers for the organisation.
Yeah.
And all that's happened is that actually they've had the audacity to
use their uterus.
Use their uterus. And that's now a problem. And this is where employers have to be courageous and say, okay, let's look at our flexible working policy. So we have a policy. How many requests are being put in versus how many are actually being given? Number one.
Yeah.
You know, and in terms of promotion, you know, what, so if you were a high performer before, you know, all those people who've been off on mat leave, what happened to their career trajectory? Where is it now? Where are they where we thought they would be versus where they actually are?
That's the key, I think. I think quotas and data collection are absolutely key to transforming gender equality in the workplace and in politics. So we suggested, following the work I've been doing with the Equality and Human Rights Commission on trying to make Greater Manchester the first city to eliminate pregnancy and maternity discrimination, we had a meeting with Andy Burnham's team, who are doing the Good Employment Charter. And I mean, that's a very complex piece of work in itself, and what the kind of carrot is to get employers to sign up, and the contents of a charter, you know, all of that stuff, very confusing. But we suggested to him that as part of that, they force companies to collect information on race, disability and women, and on around recruitment, retention and promotion, to show, so they could then, when they start collecting that data, they can see where the problems are. Are we recruiting enough people of colour? No is probably the answer. Why then? Let's think about why we're not recruiting enough people of colour. And with women, of course, probably in terms of recruitment, it's not so bad, but in terms of retention and promotion, that's where there's going to be problems. So figuring out, once they can see
where they've got a benchmark then.
Yeah, so they can't pretend it isn't happening.
Agreed.
But the big worry about Brexit, of course, is that all EU legislation gets thrown out of the window, and that includes maternity rights. It includes rights for working women. And the signs at the moment suggest that those rights will not be put back into our legislative framework in the same way that they have been historically. So essentially, we could lose all of our rights. We could end up in a situation like America. That's not beyond the realm of possibility, where there is no paid parental leave, where there is no time off work for dependents, where there is no time off work for bereavement. We've absolutely no idea what is going to happen. What frustrates me the most is that actually Brexit could be an opportunity. And you look at what Iceland did in 2008 when they had their massive economic crash. There was a female prime minister who came in, and her and her government created a much more gender equal society. It was a feminist government who implemented new legislation that gave women far more rights and therefore far much more choice. And they grew their economy again. Their economy is flourishing as a result of that.
But they took an inclusive approach, didn't they? So in Iceland, they have the daddy leave.
Yeah.
That's the use it or lose it.
Yeah.
Which exists independently of the maternity piece. So, and again, that's part of the solution, isn't it? That it? So it's taking a feminist approach, but a feminist approach that is inclusive of men and women.
Absolutely.
And acknowledging the importance of both in the equation.
And I mean, the same with Sweden. Nordic countries are just smashing it out of the park.
Yeah.
The UK, they get it. They understand the importance of it. And these are thriving economies that sit at the top of the well-being list.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be an either or, you know, you don't have to think that it costs you money to be more gender equal. Actually, the proof in the pudding exists in the Nordic countries where you can see that the two go hand in hand. I am a very dedicated member of the Women's Equality Party.
Yeah.
And it speaks to me on every level, you know, everything they say I agree with and support, and they give me hope, political hope, that actually things can change. Because although they're a very new party, they seem to be growing quickly. And when things are desperate, which they certainly feel to be now, then I think real creativity and innovation has an opportunity to thrive. And so I would hope, I'm really still clinging to the hope.
Yeah.
That something amazing is going to change.
And that, but we have to cling to that, or else what is there? So I think we have to hope. One of the questions I'm kind of asking people some walking along is, you know, in this journey that we've been on, we're still on, who are the women and the men that inspire you? So you talked about her, Angela Reynolds. Who else are the people that, you know, you look on as people that fuel you to keep doing what you do?
The woman that gives me hope at the moment is Sophie Walker, the leader of the Women's Equality Party. She's so articulate, such an incredible communicator. She's very kind and generous. And she's building and growing a movement that is actually, whether they will ever be in power or not, is a very different question, certainly not in the immediate future.
Yeah.
But the work that they're doing is changing policy. And you can see it with the last general election, what they did, by-elections and the people that they've stood as candidates. And when the mayors were elected, they stood people in, stood someone in, Tabitha, she's called, in Liverpool. And just standing those candidates and creating manifestos that put women at the heart of their policies, and seeing political parties, seeing how many people are flocking to that party and voting for them, is changing policy, is changing the way those political parties think. You see, I think we missed an opportunity with Harriet Harman, who I have a lot of admiration for. There are some incredible politicians, female politicians, but unfortunately, the ones who I feel speak for me don't have a powerful enough voice to be getting through. You know, Angela Rayner, what a woman. Oh, I love her. She's the Shadow Minister for Education. Manchester born and bred.
Is she?
Strong.
Whose MP is she? Not your MP?
No, she's, I think she's Rochdale. Oldham, maybe.
Ah, okay.
And she had a baby at 16, was kicked out of home by her parents because she was pregnant, very working class background, has got three children at 16, 16, I think she was a single mum, so surviving on her own with a baby, no family looking after her, and joined the unions and moved up the ranks in the unions, and was told by her English teacher, was it? Her English, that she would never amount to anything. She left school, that was it, at 16 as well, because she had to feed and clothe herself and her children because she'd been thrown out of home. So left school without really an education, told she'd never amount to anything. Now Shadow Minister for Education. Somebody that's talked a lot about care and breadwinning is a woman called Anne Marie Slaughter, who's American and worked for Hillary Clinton. And she kind of really opened that conversation, and American has written a couple of books about it, about this problem of valuing care and that we just don't value it enough in society. And she has a really big voice in America. So I think she's pretty awesome. I love Jess Phillips.
Yes.
I'm
reading her book at the moment.
Yeah, well, I mean, that gives lots of people more hope about starting a career in politics because she is so candid about her past.
Oh,
and
totally.
I think she's really the first person that's ever done that. Yes, I've taken drugs. Yes, I've had one night stands. Judge me for my career, my politics. Don't judge me for that stuff.
Yeah. Besides, you know, she is not the first, but actually she's probably the one who's being open and honest about it as opposed to those others that will be unearthed by the gutter press in however many years' time.
Yeah, so I just love how candid she is and just how herself she is. And that, I think, gives lots of women a bit more hope that, you know, they can do stuff.
And what about men? Who are the men that inspire you? Because it's... We'll take an inclusive approach at this point.
Who are the men that inspire me? My partner.
Tom, you gotta mention.
Tom. He's a good dad, you know. He looks, he cares about his children, and he's good to talk to about pregnancy and screwed because he would say he's a feminist, and it's great to have his perspective on certain things. I respect Andy Burnham for the work he's doing in Manchester.
And No Small Ambition, which dovetails for what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he seems to be, I don't know whether he fully understands the issue with mothers and work completely, but he certainly seems to be listening and trying.
Yeah.
And he's doing some great work around homelessness in Manchester. Very impressed. What he's been doing there. Andy Murray, I love how he has really stood up for women in tennis in situations which have been incredibly awkward. He's made a real point of ensuring that women are properly talked about and represented.
Yeah.
I've definitely admired him for doing that.
And the approach he took was to just normalise it and just make it, well, you know, I don't know why we're even having this conversation.
Yeah, and he's pulled interviewers up when they've said things.
Yeah.
You know, just stopped the interview and said, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
Andy Murray. And he seems like a good egg as well. Judy Murray, recently, his mum, tweeted about a female tennis coach in Scotland, in where Andy had presumably trained, who had gone on maternity leave and been demoted when she returned. And she tweeted about it and set the internet on fire, of course, because Judy Murray tweeting something that serious, you know, created a lot of press interest. So, you know, what a hero for speaking out about it. I've forgotten the name of the guy from Rizzle Kicks. I heard him speak recently, and he was fascinating. Called himself a feminist, but lives in the music industry, surrounded by rappers and hip-hop artists, male rappers and hip-hop artists, of course, who rap about the most unfeminist, gender equal things, you know, bitches and hoes and stuff like that, and has, you know, really questioned the whole industry, has very serious conversations with his counterparts about things that they're saying in songs, and has written lots of articles and spoken very publicly about how we have society needs to value women more.
Yeah.
I read a book recently called Why I'm No Longer Talking to White People About Race, and I would recommend everybody reads it. And I found it really hard at points, and some of the things she said, I thought, I'm not sure I agree with that, I'm not sure that sits comfortably with me. But she, of course, was only talking about race, but when I looked at it through a lens of, this is how men must feel when we're talking to them about feminism, then it kind of really opened my eyes to the experience of being a white man in that conversation.
Yeah.
But also realizing that actually white men really just have nothing to, when we're talking about it, they have no benchmark, they have nothing
to fall back to. Yeah.
And so that's why this is such a difficult conversation to have with men.
And again, this comes back to the questions I was thinking about today, you know. All of these conversations are, you know, we could be diminished by the scale of what's ahead of us, or we can just go ahead and just keep doing our bit every day, because what we do will collectively add up to make a difference.
Yeah, exactly. We've got to organise as well, you know, you think, ensuring that you bring people along on your journey. What I would love to see happen with Pregnant Women's Grid is it truly become an international campaign. So we exist in America, Spain and Sweden. We're looking at Germany and Canada next. And there's lots more things that we could be doing in those countries. No country is immune from this problem. Every country it exists in every country. And so I would love to see it grow into a truly international campaign supporting women all over the world. That's the future ambition. I would also, the Pregnant Women Screwed Live events, I want to see them continue and grow and grow and grow, because the feedback we had from Manchester was that people called it life-changing, said it really, really made a difference to their confidence, to them thinking about how they can be a professional and be a mother, you know, that sort of, those sorts of conversations that didn't really exist for them previously.
Yeah, you're creating a legacy by what you're doing.
Well, I would like to think so, but capturing that is quite difficult. So saying it to a funder, they're like, yeah, whatevs. Yes. They all say that.
Yeah.
How you capture change, you know, and prove it is very, very difficult. Women feel like they can talk to me about what they're going through and know that we will help them in some form. And I think the difference between Pregnant Women's Grid and other organisations that support women is that we're grassroots, we're built from the ground up. I set it up because it happened to me.
Yes.
And I'm very public about my story. So I think when it happens to another woman, they think, oh, she'll understand, she gets it. And I do get it. And I do understand how they're feeling mentally. Whereas, you know, bigger organisations and charities are institutions, and they don't feel as friendly and as familiar. Mothers really are the heart of a community. We keep communities going, and we do it because we want to know that our children are happy and safe.
Yeah.
I love what Iceland, they did in Iceland to further gender equality in the 70s when they went on strike. All women went on strike for a day.
Yeah.
And they still, men still refer to it as the Long Friday. But, and I think it was something like 90% of women went on strike. Obviously, it's a lot smaller, it's Iceland than the UK. But that it changed everything, because it suddenly made all these men realise that actually, you know, we work. We keep everything ticking over.
Yeah.
But they can't go out and, you know, because we see breadwinning so much more important than caregiving. Breadwinning cannot exist without caregiving. And so there are all these images of like news anchors bouncing their children on their knees and like, and
brilliant.
It was just a day, but it was fundamental in changing mindsets.
But days like this are symbolic and very important, isn't it? Mm. But like Jacinda Ardern yesterday taking baby knee to the UN General Assembly.
What is this, Mummy?
It's a little muff.
Little muff?
Yeah. Don't play with it, please, because you might break it. Yeah, that is amazing. I love her.
I do.
She's, yeah, but there you go. There's another inspirational woman.
And I think also the acknowledgement, you know, so she said she would come back after 6 weeks and did, but, and not everybody has the luxury of being able to bring their partner and baby with them to continue breastfeeding, but she can, so why shouldn't she?
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
And I think we all have to carve out an individual path and make it work for us in whatever way we can, and normalising parenthood and say, yeah, I've come back because I said I would, but I've still come back as a parent.
Yeah.
So you need to see that.
I'm not going to just leave everything at home and come to work as just a worker. I am.
Yeah.
I'm a mother and an employee or and a business owner. Yeah, and she's transforming the way that we view what is possible within senior positions by doing that.
Yeah.
Those messages are like so important. That. What do you think about feminism, Jack? What do you think about girls? Oh. That's a good answer.